Would you give your mum, dad, aunt or that uncle who hugged your partner a little too long free access to your phone?
Oh, no!
Oh, my God, it's a really long video. Ew!
In Dave's brand new YouTube original, Get Off My Phone, we've got six comedians to give their phones over to a relative with total freedom to read messages, DMs, photos and browser history.
Where's your search history?
Sorry?
What to do, tips for relief.
The rules are simple. Their relative can read anything they want and even make calls from the comedian's phone.
What is this?
What is... I don't want this one.
That looks really bad.
Starring Tanya Moore, Anya Magliano, Finlay Christie, Travis J with his mum Angie Lamar, Hayley Morris, Grace Campbell and dad Alistair Campbell.
Slightly sexually compromising
people. Divulging their deepest digital secrets.
What the hell is happening?
Get Off My Phone, a Dave YouTube original. Available now on Dave's YouTube channel.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello. Hello, Catherine.
Oh my God, what a joy to meet
you. Isn't it a dream? It's a dream come true.
It really is. I'm so happy to talk to you.
Hello, I'm Mika Burns, director and producer of the wonderful Edinburgh Comedy Awards. And welcome to a special mini-series that celebrates 40 years of Dave's Edinburgh Comedy Awards. Join 1995 Best Comedy Show winner Jenny Eclair as she talks to 2019 Best Newcomer winner Catherine Cohen about their award-winning shows, pre-show routines and the secrets to surviving the Edinburgh Festival Fringe.
Tell me where you are, what you're doing, what your mental state is, and then I'll fill you in on me. I
perfection.
Want all the Edinburgh gossip and how it's going. I want weather. I want what your flat's like. I want everything about the festival, please. I've been starved for years. Oh,
well, you know, I'm having the time of my life. It's so magical to be back. I'm in my flat in Edinburgh. We just saw a mouse, but it was a really cute one, like really small and sweet. And I would love for her to come and hop on the pod if she has anything to say. I'm doing my shows. Actually, today's my day off, so I feel so at peace.
Are you hungover? You should be slightly hungover on your day off.
I feel like the whole festival is kind of an emotional hangover, and I always, whether or not I'm drunk, I feel like I'm on some sort of drug. Yeah. Just like...
How many times have you cried?
Oh, so many. Last night. Last night I cried because of just the idea... Last night I cried just about the idea of love.
Oh dear.
You know what I mean?
Oh, I thought maybe you've got a snotty review. Who gives a shit about love?
What's going on with you? Where are you? Tell me your emotional state and your updates.
Okay, well, I'm very hot, Catherine, very hot, because, of course, the weather hasn't broken here. We're recording this in the middle of August, in the middle of a heat wave, and I'm, you know, a very overweight, sweaty, bad-tempered, overly middle-aged woman. I don't know, I'm 62. I don't know whether I'm allowed to be middle-aged anymore. I'm kind of middle-aged plus. I'm heading towards senior citizen, let's face it. But I'm in my study in Camberwell, and I'm chatting to you, which is a delight. And then I'm hot footing it over to Tulse Hill to see my newborn grandson. I mean, he's been knocking around for 3 weeks now, so he's not that newborn.
Congratulations!
I did nothing.
He's old news.
I did nothing, to be quite honest.
That's so amazing.
But my daughter needs a little bit of help. But basically, when she wants me to skibbe for her, I go and do some ironing while she rolls around with the baby on her chest and does that. It's one of the reasons why I'm not up at the festival with this, you know, this was going on. So tell me about, we show you one best newcomer in 2019.
Yes.
And now you're, is that right?
Cause yeah, before the world shut down. So I did a show called The Twist, She's Gorgeous.
Yes.
In 2019. I actually just did it for the last time ever on Friday night. So it was very emotional in a good way.
Where did you do that?
We did a big one. We did a one night only at the Pleasance Grand. And so we had a nice, good vibes. It was, it felt like a nice way to say goodbye to the end of a chapter.
Yeah, but yeah. Catherine, that means you've had two shows in your head up until Friday, which is quite
It is tough. So now I can move on. I was definitely checking my notes a lot. It was, remembering jokes that I wrote from like 5 years ago is never pleasant, but we made it work.
They're often the best ones, though.
I know.
I'm rootling around in my handbag for old jokes all the time. You know, they come out, the classics. We like to call them classics rather than old jokes, don't we? What's the show?
There we go, classics.
The classics, yes. And we're recycling. It's not old, it's vintage. What is the show you're doing now?
I'm actually just doing a work in progress, but it's almost there.
Okay. And the title is?
There is no title yet.
So you're being very brave. You're going out with just your name.
Just my name and the idea, the promise of a new idea.
Okay. So that's quite a thing to do, though.
Yeah, well, I just wasn't ready to stick a title on it and be reviewed and all that. I'm just here for the experience and to get better. And I'm only here 2 weeks, and I'm just trying to – basically the plan is to leave with a finished show and go do it in New York in the fall.
Oh, God, that sounds exciting. That just sounds so grown up and glamorous and, you know, so you're not schlepping around.
I'm so honored. I never thought of it that way.
Oh, it is. I mean, just I love performing in New York. I'm really sorry. That's just a thing. I've never done that.
Well, you got to come over. It's time.
But do you know what? I think I could carve a niche in New York, and it would get me out
Absolutely.
Of babysitting duties. I've timed my latest tour quite well to get me out of grandma duties. I set off again in September with a show called 60 for fuck's sake, which obviously we have abbreviated.
Amazing.
So it's 60 FFS. ! Whatever. I'm actually 62 now, but as we all know, COVID stopped play for a couple of years.
That's true.
Yeah. So it's kind of, you know, I've come this, well, not full circle really, because I you know, I'm intending to keep going for a long time to come. But, you know, I look back on
there we go,
the Edinburghs of, you know, my past and how very forming they were, really, and how, you know, I became the stand-up I am because of everything you do. It's not just Edinburgh, but Edinburgh was such a huge thing for me for so many years. And I have to talk about this because this is what we've been asked to go on the podcast for, and, you know, try stopping me anyway. But I got the Perrier in. I got the Perrier Award, as it was called back then, in 1995. So you could possibly be younger than
and the first woman. The first woman.
Well, first solo woman. I mean, you know, I think you have a sketch from
Gotcha.
I think she was in the Cambridge Review or the Footlights or whatever, and they won, you know, before me. And then there was a singer called Barb Junger who had accompanied a comedian called Arnold Brown with a show called Brown Blues before me. But I was the first solo, winner.
Yes. And what was your show? What was your show called that you won?
Well,
with?
It was a show called Prozac and Tantrums.
Wow.
And it was very 90s. It was very sort of, it's hard to, I mean, it's impossible because you could be a child. How old are you? I'm saying you're in your early 30s.
My birthday was this week. I just turned 31.
Okay, yeah. So you're my daughter's generation.
But in pandemic years, I'm 29, so.
Absolutely. I think I'll claim those two back then. it was mid-90s. It's when you were growing up, you were being sorted to New York, a toddler.
Yes.
I was a mother. I had a child in 1995.
Oh my God, wow, that's inspiring.
Yeah, she used to come up and it was a very good grounding for her, actually. She used to come up and see, you know, have huge breakdowns and great cartoon watching at home, and I think that's very good for children to watch adults completely and utterly fall to pieces. So, and she's done it herself loads of times as well, my daughter. She's
amazing.
So she's performed at Edinburgh. She's written shows for Edinburgh. But both of us are having this year off. I very much hope she'll be back sometime. But yes, Prozac and Tantrums was the show. I remember the poster, actually, because image had just started to become important. I mean, in the early days of the festival, people really didn't have posters or anything like that. You know, they had, everything was sort of drawn with biros and stuck up with blue tack, lampposts and things. It wasn't the professional. By the mid-90s, it was suddenly getting quite professional.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's the creatives have come on board, you know, design teams and all that. It was really going up. I had a poster and it was a sort of neon pink, and I was in a bathroom with hairy robes.
Oh, amazing.
And a very heavy smoky eye. And I think I had a cigarette because I was still a heavy smoker in those days, looking sort of, and false eyelashes and all that. So it was a very glam kind of edgy.
I love, you know, that look. Yes.
It was very sort of, I saw that wannabe streetcar named Desire, Blanche DuBois.
Yes.
Kind of. So, yeah, and I definitely went up to the festival with the intention of winning the award. Did you?
Hell yes. Yeah, I was like, I'm going to win.
It's kind of time. You know, it's a bit like being an athlete, isn't it, Edinburgh?
Yeah.
You kind of know when it's your medal year.
Well, also, I was coming all the way from New York. I was like, this is very intense. I'm not going to come unless the show is like perfect. You know, I'm not, because I've been doing the show for a few years. So I was like, I'm ready to come through and just kill it. You know what I mean? And that's why this year I'm doing just, it's not quite ready.
Don't hurt me. Don't be mean to me. Don't be mean to me. I'm doing some tryouts in the next week. And, you know, they are working for us. And I used to charge, you know, very little money.
Yeah, yeah.
For people to come and fumble and stumble around and apologise and fart and, you know, trip over myself. Where are you doing your show, the work in progress?
My show's at the Pleasance 2.
Let me think which one that is. Is that the farm?
That is, I don't know how to describe it. It's nice. It's like a, I don't know the terminology.
Is it very rake seating? Rake seating.
Very rake seating.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's in the courtyard. It's sort of at the back of the courtyard, and it's like a big barn. And the audience go up steps to enter.
Yes, they do. Yeah, very good. What's your favourite Edinburgh venue?
The one you're performing in right now, actually, the Pleasance 2. Yes.
Wow.
I did a show there in 94 called The Bad Behaviour Show, which was also published as a book. And
oh, wow. I love that title.
It was a good title. And I always remember I'd choreographed this opening to the show. And what it involved was me falling down the entire flight of stairs. you know, the audience come in, they come up the stairs and then they come down to the stage is on the flat and it's it's very raked seating. So at the side of the venue, there's a long staircase. And I used to stage this fall that went from the top of the, I can do falls, but I can't do them as well as I think I can. And I wore at the time a fake fur jacket, a big shaggy fake fur jacket to kind of break the falling a bit. And I always remember, and the trouble was, everyone was looking at the stage waiting for me to come on, and nobody was looking at the side of the stage at the flight of stairs. So about 98% of the audience just never saw this entrance. The only person that ever saw it and commented on it was Stuart Lee, who said the best bit of your show was the fact that you staged this massive fall, nobody saw it, and then you still had to get on with the show.
I need to see that. That was unbelievable.
Yeah, it was good fun. Up to a point.
I'm obsessive about titles, entrances. I love the whole thing. Yeah. Bad Behavior Show. I want to hear more of your titles.
Well, I did a show called How to Be a Middle-Aged Woman Without Going Insane. And that sold itself on the poster, which was a picture of me in my bra and pants in my late 50s.
Incredible.
And that's how I came on stage.
What is the secret?
The secret is to not give a shit, obviously.
There we go.
If you come on stage as an older woman in your bra and pants and they don't match, that is the crucial element. The bra and pants don't match. Because if they match, you've thought about it. But if they don't match, and you're actually wearing slippers as well, then it becomes funny, especially if you're dancing to Debbie Harry, and you think you are Debbie Harry, but actually you're not. I've always thought that entrances, exits, all those things, they're part that, you know, that stops stand up. That is the difference between doing a stand up set in a club mm-hmm. and doing a show.
Totally. I just saw last night I went to see Tim Key, and he was on stage while everyone was coming in, just looking at everyone. It was incredible. Just drinking a beer and watching everyone.
I've seen that quite a lot though, Catherine.
You've seen it quite a lot.
Because Louisa Almalan has always done that.
It was very funny. Okay, I'll keep that in mind.
Yeah. She'll keep a little notebook of entrances and exits, and you know whether they've been done before. What else have you seen up there? Have you got? Is there a sort of whiff on the street of what's going to win this year?
I don't know yet. It's really hard for me to see something before my show's really late at night, and I feel like during the day I'm just kind of in panic mode until then. So it's hard to unwind and see a show. But hopefully tonight I'm going to see some stuff because it's my famous day off. I don't know. I think Sophie Ducker is doing really well. Her show is all sold out, so I can't get in, which is exciting. A few other people have already sold out their whole runs, which is great. I feel like those are probably the ones
sometimes
that are buzzy.
You can squeeze in next to the lighting guy.
Oh, good call. Yes, I'm sure I could weasel my way in.
Yeah. But I mean, it's you know, when you're talking about that sort of your show being late at night and the whole day mm-hmm. is geared up towards the show, and people think, well, you've got so much time. Why don't you go to the botanical gardens? Why don't you go to the zoo? Why don't you go and see? Listen, I usually do the art because that is something that I'm passionate about. So I will go to the galleries, but I will get there very early in the morning, and then I'll get back to bed because you're only safe when you're in your bedroom, aren't you? Before a show.
That is the truest thing I've ever heard in my life. I need to be horizontal for about 12 hours before I perform.
I understand.
I've also found a great Thai massage place that I've been sneaking away to. Too often they're sick of me. They're like, you just came here.
Again?
I know. I just need someone to shove their elbow so deep into my body that I forget my name. That's what I like.
Ooh, but
but it's been good. No, I'm very big on going full diva mode before the show every night.
What are your pre-show routines? I think that women particularly are, what used to shock me on the circuit was how casual men could be about performing.
Wow, yes.
Because I would always be in the dressing room sort of an hour and a half before mm-hmm. the gig. You know, I went to drama school, so I have quite drama school habits. You know, I believe in the half. I believe in certain things that, are very theatrical rather than stand-up-y. I believe in sort of getting there on time and doing the show and being sober.
Wow.
I know, it's old-fashioned quote. But in the old days, I do remember sort of just thinking, well, so-and-so's meant to be on next and he isn't actually here yet. And literally, just as the person before them was finishing off, you'd see somebody sort of shamble in the doors and you go, yes, he's here now. He's cut it that fine. I could never do that.
Oh, God, no. I'm very big on preparation. I take like extra time to do my makeup every night. I like do my vocal warm-ups. And in 2019, when I famously won the award, I did not drink. I did not go out. I did not socialize. I was like a complete nun because I was just like so focused. It was obviously very stressful, but it felt so good.
And how did you feel when the award was announced?
Oh, I was so, so happy. It was such a pleasant surprise and just a great honor.
And who was announcing? Do you remember the whole night? Take me through the night.
Well, it was like they did it like in the morning, so I was sort of asleep. Right. But no, it was great. It was very fun. Well, the funny thing that happened was that afterwards, when you're talking to like the journalists and stuff, this one woman, I think, thought I was a different nominee, and she was like, "And the car crash, that must have been devastating." And I was like, "That's not in my show." And she was like, "That's not your show?" I was like, "No, girl." I was like, I definitely have not discussed a car crash. But no, it was a magical day. What about you?
Well, ours was nighttime back then. It was,
more glamorous.
At midnight.
Oh, fun.
Yes. So I was the only girl nominee, and I treated myself to a black lace dress.
Yes.
I was in my mid 30s, and I'd been doing a lot of yoga, Catherine. I mean, since then, it's been 27 years of letting myself go. But at the time, I was quite hot.
I think you look fabulous.
Oh, you're very kind. But so, yes, and I went with my date for the night was the actress Sally Phillips from Drop the Dead Donkey and various other films and Miranda and all this sort of things. Sally's a really good comedian and actress. And she was sort of my moral support because my family, my partner and my daughter were in Wales on holiday. And I sort of dressed up for it. And it was everything I wanted from show business. In that very old-fashioned kind of, because I did go to drama school, I thought I was going to be an actress, and it was only when I was at drama school I realised that I had no talent whatsoever.
No, impossible.
Sadly, I could never be anybody else on stage. There was always me creeping through. Do you know what I mean? Or do you act?
Absolutely.
As well?
I'm like, I do act, but I find I'm at my happiest when I'm doing my own material because it just feels. Yeah, it feels, this is what I'm meant to do. That's how I feel whenever I'm at Edinburgh. I'm like, I'm doing whatever's going on in the rest of the world doesn't matter right now. This is exactly where I'm supposed to be.
Yeah.
You know, it feels very good. So then they announced your name and you're in your black lace dress.
And and it was flash bulbs and champagne and flowers. And then I don't know about you, but I mean, you know, I have problems with self-discipline. And so I'd been very disciplined up until that moment. And then I got absolutely fucking pissed out of my head.
Good.
To a point where I was a danger to myself. And I hitchhiked home.
Oh, my God.
Just stupid things. And my feet were bleeding. And I just didn't stop drinking. And I had to do a show the next day. And I felt so unworthy.
That's what I was going to,
I did the whole sort of, turnaround. I hated myself. When I eventually came around in the morning, I hated myself. I hated the award. I couldn't cope with it. I wanted to run away. I felt like a fraud.
No.
I was on the verge of phoning my agent saying, you've got to give this back. You've got to give this back. I can't cope with it. Because of a hangover, because of sort of listening to the bad voices in my head and the naysayers, you know, because there had been quite a lot of discussion about the award and, you know, was I worthy as a woman and all this kind of thing. Because there was a little, possibly a little bit more spotlight on it because, you know, women weren't often nominated.
Right.
Or if they were, they didn't often win. So it became something that was up for debate. You know, was I actually worth it? How had I won it?
Oh.
You know, were there sort of nefarious ways, means, you know, who had slipped somebody some money or had I slept with somebody?
God.
Or, you know, that kind of thing. But it was mostly self-inflicted, self-loathing.
God, I know.
And questioning my own talents and abilities.
Yeah, it's really hard to be nice to yourself, isn't it?
Yeah. In a pressure cooker like Edinburgh, particularly, where you hold yourself up against everybody else.
Oh, it's so deadly. Just, you walk down the street and you see all your peers and how well everyone's doing. And you immediately think, well, I guess I'm the biggest loser in this country.
Yeah. And is when you realize that's how most people feel. You know, if you
absolutely.
Get one-on-one, you know, that most people are snivelling. And everybody has a favorite crying toilet, you know, which they can find and lock themselves into in their venue.
Yeah, the crying helps. You gotta let it go. I worry. I feel like I have some friends who don't ever cry, and I'm like, that's way worse. I'd rather cry.
What, performer
every day.
Friends?
Yeah, maybe I'm trying to think. Maybe more writer types.
Yeah,
who keep it all in, put it on the page.
Yeah.
But I also think a bad hangover will make you question everything you've ever done in your entire life. So that makes sense.
Yeah. I think, though, back then we had a sort of like about 5 days left of the festival. And suddenly I felt under a lot of pressure. And I was exhausted by it. And I just thought, you know, I want to go home now. I want to see my daughter. I want to, I want my mum.
Totally. How was, because there's a weird energy when you come out after winning and the crowd's like, let's see what she got.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah, absolutely.
How were those last shows?
Terrible. Died on my ass. No. No, not entirely.
Oh, please.
Not entirely, but there was a big showcase where I didn't do well.
Oh, what does not doing well look like for you? Is it in your head or do you really mean you didn't do well?
I didn't do as well as some of the other nominees who went on before me because I was the winner. So there's a big showcase at the Assembly Rooms, which at the time was, you know,
is that that big church thing?
No, it was sort of old fashioned Assembly Rooms, which look a bit like a town hall. It was on George Street.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You know, the whole festival has shifted to another part of the town. In the old days, it used to be sort of this side of Princess Street.
I see.
As much as the other side. But yeah, there was this, and it was in the big venue, and it was packed, and you know, all the other male nominees went on, and they tore the roof off the place, and you know, there's nothing worse than the sound of laughter at someone, another comic, before you go on. You know, when you're in a dressing room,
yeah,
it's like poison, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like wow, they already hate me.
Yeah. Yeah, they really won't like what I do as soon as I walk on. But and I was all sweat. I mean, it was, as I say, it was mid-90s. It's quite interesting to look back at that time in terms of politics and history and particularly the lad culture that was going on, the lad and ladette culture. You're too young to really have been immersed in it, but it was a very different form of sexism because it was sold as women were on an equal playing field with men, as long as they were very brazen and got their tits out and really and celebrated getting their tits out. And it's interesting to look back now on the 90s and just realize how toxic it actually was. So I had created this very brazen, swaggering character. You know, I was the sort of chain smoking, vodka swigging, and I wore red or black PVC jeans.
Oh my god.
And it's too hot this year.
I mean, I would die instantly. But yeah, I was very, you mean very good, guys, girl, like, can she hang, pick me girl, they say now.
Yeah.
Oh, exhausting. I feel very lucky to have come up in a scene with mostly women and gay men. It's very pleasant.
Yeah. I do think that comedy has shifted for the better.
Totally.
Into, you know, and what I like most about how things have changed is that comedy is no longer as narrow as it used to be. There used to be fashions, and if you weren't that type of comic doing, you know, a certain style of comedy at the time, you were so out of it. And now people are allowed to be really, really themselves.
Absolutely. It's so inspiring to be here and just get to watch all different types of people thriving. And it's just like, it's great. It's been so fun, especially after pandemic. The high is even more intense because I've been locked in my room for 2 years. I'm like, I forgot. It's just, that we could ever do this again. So that feels very lucky. So what was life like after you won the award and you went back home?
Well, I spent some of the money. I think I got $5,000 and I had to spend some of the money on a washing machine.
How exciting. That is.
You know, and then I had a 6-year-old to get ready for school. And
I cannot imagine. How did you do that? I can't imagine. Thinking about anyone but myself all day.
Well, I did that as well. I was able to multitask. I only had one child because I think that, you know, if you have more than one child in this business, you have to be uber, uber successful so that you can afford plenty of help.
Totally.
And I never got to that stage in my career. To be quite honest, Catherine, nobody really knew what to do with me. It had been a surprise win. And everyone was taken slightly by surprise by it. And there was nothing really set up. And I don't know. I think any opportunities I was given, I probably wasted. because I wasn't mentally sort of in a great state. I got a very odd Channel 5 show called Jenny Eclair Squats, where I went round to different people's houses and just talked.
That sounds great.
It was a bit ahead of its time, darling. I think.
Yeah, there we go. They weren't ready. We need to bring it. Bring it back. Bring back Jenny Eclair Squats.
I think that, you know, what are you by nature, do you think? Do you think you are wholly a stand-up?
No. I'm an actress.
Okay. You're an actress and a writer.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I don't really know what I'm doing.
Okay. Well, you're still very young. I knew that.
What do
I
was you
always,
think?
Well, I was always a performer. I was always a performer.
Yeah.
You know, and then over the years, I think it's been interesting what I've been able to do and whether I think, let me just try and sort this out in my head. There was an interesting program on BBC Two, which I didn't watch, obviously, because I wasn't invited onto it. And I find that the easiest way of dealing with programs I'm not invited on. I don't fucking watch them. But it was called The Festival Fame and Me. And it was about the Edinburgh Festival and comedy and all this sort of thing. And I saw a very interesting clip with Emma Thompson saying that she didn't think festivals were about going up to win prizes. And it was about experimenting with your craft and meeting like-minded people. And I thought, yeah, unless you're me, in which case I really wanted to fucking win this thing. And I needed my career to get up, to step up a gear. Because I wanted more security. I wanted to be able to buy a car. I wanted some stuff, you know.
Totally.
I loved working the circuit. I really did, but it was exhausting. And I, you know, it was before mobile phones. It was before apps. It was, you were standing in the middle of fucking nowhere with an A to Z trying to find, you know, something. And I've always been the most short-sighted woman ever. I couldn't find anywhere. I couldn't find where I was meant to be. And then you were on train stations at midnight, sort of hoping the last train was going to be by yourself. And you were by yourself and you hope, and you just thought, you know, there's a shadow there. And it was frightening and it was tiring and it was just grueling sometimes. And also back then, audiences weren't respectful. I think one of the great things about audiences now is that they listen more. So I wanted a way slightly out of that in some respects. And what the Perrier or Dave's Comedy Award or whatever it's called now, I think gave me were stepping stones into other arenas that I could, well, not arenas, I've never done a fucking arena in my life, but other areas in which I could play. I'd started being able to do my own theatre tours. And that's when you really come into your own, isn't it? When people come to see you and you can be the real you that you are.
Oh, it's heaven on earth.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's magical. Yeah, I feel like I kind of got back to New York with the award and then the world shut down pretty quickly. And now we're just getting back to it.
It wasn't fair. It wasn't fair because... as I say, my daughter's 33, and in 2019, she won one of the biggest playwriting awards.
Oh my God, amazing.
In Europe. It's called the Bruntwood. And, you know, that was meant to, she was meant to have a placement in Canada. She was meant to go to Los Angeles. And it just stopped. It just, you know, everything just stopped. I think your generation had been mightily shat on.
It's rough. I'm lucky I got to tape the show. I got to tape the show as a special for Netflix, which was amazing.
Oh, marvelous.
It was fabulous, but it was very funny because I taped it in 2021. So I went back and I, thank God I had one recording of the Edinburgh show and I played it on repeat. I was like, who is this person? I don't even remember who this is. And I had to reteach myself how to be a fun, happy version of myself. Yeah. And then, but yeah, it's been tough. How's your daughter doing now? I guess now she has a kid.
Yeah, we don't talk about, well, I'm hoping she'll get back to, I mean, you know, the career isn't over just because you have a child.
Yeah, of course not.
And you know, I think I'm meant to help. But she has just realized that I'm meant to help. But she just sort of looked at my tour days and just goes, oh, God, so how are you going to help when you're in Cardiff? Oh, that's, I don't know. Well, it'll muddle through, you know. She's 33. I was 28 when I had a baby.
Wow.
And it just...
you figure it out, huh? Oh, God. Crazy.
I've got to... I'm still with the same bloke.
Oh, that's... What's the secret to that?
Well, it's not giving head, let me tell you that, as you say in your language. no, I don't know. I don't know what it is. It's just sort of better the devil you know, really, isn't it? But there we go. So what are you hoping to get? What are you hoping to say out of this new show? And what do you think you managed to say with your best newcomer show?
Oh, wow. I think... oh, God, that's a tough one, isn't it? I think the first show was very much about my 20s and about being just like the most, just being a hyper-confident woman in a world that doesn't want you to be, and just coming on stage with like just ready to just destroy. And it was just, about finding a way to love yourself, blah, blah, blah. And then this one's a bit more about existential dread. And yeah. does that sound fun?
I think it's where we're all at.
Yeah, it's a bit hard to feel like even doing some of the old jokes feels silly because I'm like, well, that's not my mindset anymore, you know. What about you? What's the new tour going to be like?
Well, it's I started it last year. Let's face it, Catherine, you know, it's I'm putting a new wheels on an old cart and taking it out in the autumn. I mean, it's still valid. There is some stuff about lockdown, but that will eventually get edited out. I mean, I think it's something that we still need to acknowledge because I don't think anybody really is giving anybody any credit for the trauma we've been through. And I think we're almost just get over this. And just now and again, real life is quite overwhelming. And dealing with getting back into the groove and just, you know, having to get out and do things and be responsible. And you just said there's a bit of you goes that has gone a little bit agoraphobic.
Totally. I used to hate spending time alone. Like I couldn't do it for even an hour. And now I need to be by myself all the time or I feel unwell. You know what I mean? I'm like, we need to grieve. We need to grieve what's happened. And instead, you know, so it's a different energy when you pop back on stage. There's like joy, but there's also like this understanding that we've shared this intense collective trauma.
And I think people also are what's going to be interesting going out in the autumn is if anyone can afford tickets. And this the ongoing crisis about the cost of living and everything and actually how bruised we all are and how battle weary we are, and now we're facing another load of shit, which is financial crisis, you know, the climate crisis. This heat wave almost finished me off. It was sort of it's just like, how, you know.
How much can we take?
Yeah, a little bit of that. But this is why we are here, to spread joy.
I do feel like since coming back on stage, there is the energy in the audiences when it's good is so special. And people were coming up to me after shows being like, oh, my God, thank you, in a way that felt like so real and needed. And so there is some special magic to that. So it's not all bad news.
No, I remember coming back after lockdown to the first, you know, proper tour gig after, you know, not gigging for 2 years. And just the noise of people clapping as I walked on stage choked me up. I barely could speak.
Yes, absolutely.
We are very needy, aren't we?
Oh, I need so much. I need so much.
Are you living with anybody in that flat?
Yes, I'm living with my friend Fraser is playing piano for me because I do songs in my show.
Yeah.
And then we're living with someone else on the production team. So we got a 3-bedroom. It's right in the center of town. It's right by Nicholson Square. It's great. And my boyfriend's going to come up this weekend, which will be nice.
Yeah, yeah. He mustn't speak, though. He mustn't do anything. He mustn't get in the way. And he mustn't interrupt your schedule. Does he know that he has to sort of basically live very quietly?
Yeah, he knows that I'm a full monster and I won't be speaking during the day.
Fine.
But it's just 2 days. I think we can get through it and then I'm done. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, all the very best with that. It sounds like you're keeping yourself together. Are you eating well?
Yes, I'm eating a lot really late at night, which feels really good. It's really good for the system. I love the crepe stand. That's my favorite.
Yeah.
Something to look forward to in this life.
And what about your pre-show routine? You've already said that it's makeup and it's, when do you eat? What time is your show and when do you eat?
Way before, I just like eat lunch and then my show's at like 9:45, 9:40. So I kind of, it's hard to eat before the show. Do you agree?
Well, I have to have a light something or other. I like a 7:30 show, Catherine. I mean, the days of me getting on stage like at 9:40, you're fucking kidding. Ooh. I'm not there. I'm heading home. 9:40, love.
I can't do it. If the sun's still out, I'm not going on stage. It's depressing.
Really? I just close the curtains. We'll get through this.
Create your own world, yeah.
7:30 show.
That's the ticket.
I do a 45-minute first half. We have a 20-minute interval. Then I come off on for another 40 minutes. We're sort of out by 9:30. And that's how my audience likes it. And I have also in the autumn, I share a soup with my tour manager. And then after the show, I have a sandwich. And then I might have a glass of wine. And then what happens is that the evil crisp hand comes out and I rip open when I'm being driven home. I rip open those big, big bags of potato based snacks. From Marks and Spencer's, or you get them from Waitrose as well, and they're all different shapes. Those are my favourites.
You know, I heard crisps are good for your voice.
The oils,
yeah, so they keep doing it, never
change. Fatty oils.
The fatty oils massage your cords, and they're a secret weapon.
Well, I should remember that when I'm back on tour.
You're taking care of yourself when you have crisps.
Yeah, and I'm shoveling potato-based snacks into
just
my
face. Paw.
Right. Well, let me just check these questions to see.
Did we miss anything? Oh, I need. What advice would you give to comedians,
particularly female comedians?
Yeah.
On very practical things, I would. It's about not drinking, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. It's sad but true.
Yeah, it's about. It's about self-care. I mean, I hate saying things like that because, I mean, I feel a bit Gwyneth Paltrow. But it is a bit, isn't it? You do have to look after yourself.
Yeah, you have to shut everything else out and just focus on what makes you feel good. And I need to sleep like 9 hours or I feel like I'm going to die.
Oh, yes. I mean, I do that when I'm not even doing shows.
Me too. I sleep. My boyfriend says I sleep way too much, and I tell him, "There's no such thing." There's no such thing. It's healthy, crisps.
Yeah. And we've got that. So basically, sleep and eat crisps. That's our advice for any budding aspiring.
Sleep, eat crisps, and don't look at other people's stuff. It has nothing to do with you.
I think that's so much harder now for your generation with social media.
Oh, it's we live in hell. Every day, every single one of my peers and all their accolades directly to my phone.
Oh, no. How?
Well, I mean, I'm lucky in that I have lots of friends who are very talented and successful, but that just means
I know
it's...
There's another
they don't make
advice.
It easy.
I'd surround yourself with losers. I'd make sure all your best mates are absolutely crap. That's really difficult.
That's a good one.
I don't know. I mean, I'm fortunate and that sort of passed me by. I was sort of pre all that. I mean, it was bad enough waiting for the... What I used to do was the first copies of The Scotsman used to land in the assembly rooms at midnight. And there would always be a sort of little huddle of desperate comedians waiting for these newspapers to land.
That's tough. No, you got to do that in private now.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yes, I think the thing is to sort of find places to be private, to cry, to gloat. If you are doing well, it's quite important that you gloat privately as well.
Mm-hmm. And enjoy it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very special. If you possibly can, and eat some vegetables.
Definitely. Jenny, thank you so much for chatting with me. Meeting you has been an absolute dream. I feel so lucky I got to talk with you.
Oh, well, don't be ridiculous. I think you should get back to bed because it's coming up for 9 hours before your show. Oh, no, you got the day off. Maybe you need a double sleep today. Maybe you can get 18 hours in.
I'm definitely getting back to bed. 11 a.m. fringe time is basically like 6 a.m. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So I've got to get back on schedule. You've done very well indeed. You've done very, it's a bit like being jet lagged, isn't it? Getting up at 11 at the fringe.
Exactly.
A fabulous run.
Oh, thank you so much.
As you're there and, you know, it's great shows back in New York. And one day I will
come visit
there. One
Please
day.
Do.
I'm going to phone my agent now. I'm fed up. I've had enough. I'm going to go.
It's time.
Going to do some Christmas shows. All right, then, darling.
Oh,
have
a great.
Have great fun. Give my love to anybody I know. And, I just hope everybody's having some fun sometimes.
Fun is being had. Fun is definitely being had.
Good.
Send my love to your daughter and the baby and enjoy your tour.
Yeah, I will.
Thanks
Little
so much.
Little Arlo. See you soon. Take care, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
To follow all the news about this year's awards, find at Comedy Awards and Dave on all your social media channels.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Would you give your mum, dad, aunt, or that uncle who hugged your partner a little too long free access to your phone?
Oh, no! Oh, my God, it's a really long video. Ew!
In Dave's brand new YouTube original, Get Off My Phone, we've got 6 comedians to give their phones over to a relative with total freedom to read messages, DMs, photos, and browser history.
Where's your search history?
Sorry?
What to do, tips for relief.
The rules are simple. Their relative can read anything they want and even make calls from the comedian's phone.
What is this? I don't want this one.
That looks really bad.
Starring Tanya Moore, Anya Magliano, Finlay Christie, Travis J with his mum Angie Lamar, Hayley Morris, Grace Campbell and dad Alistair Campbell.
Slightly sexually compromising people.
Divulging their deepest digital secrets.
What the hell is happening?
Get Off My Phone, a Dave YouTube original. Available now on Dave's YouTube channel.